my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 491, to be broadcast on Wednesday, July 16th, 2026. On WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Sorry for that little technical blip in the beginning there. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. She's getting ready to go off to work. I'm recording a day later than normal, and that is because I was away for the weekend announcing an event up in Vermont. Anyway, we'll get back to that in a second. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can make your little comments right down here below in the comment section on Facebook Live, or you can send me an email at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's rant of the week. Talk about irony. All I can say is be careful out there. Sad news. Louisa Gag, longtime street advocacy safety advocate, was identified in last Thursday's homicide crash victim. Family members have identified the victim in Thursday morning's homicide crash over Roxbury Crossing as Louisa Gag, a longtime street safety advocate and transportation planner at Boston City Hall. Like I said, talk about the irony. Anyway, I've got a little bit more information on that. We may get to that a little bit later in the show, but she was very well known in the Boston area, and our thoughts are out to the family and friends. And the state of Massachusetts. Great loss. And my friends at the UCI are at it again. And of course, it has everything to do with socks. I'm not going to go there right now, but I will talk to you. And it's not sock height this time. The UCI, they're so much fun. Anyway, let's move on. On a positive side, speaking of the UCI and everything that goes on around it, the Tour de France. What a week! Did you see this? Have you been watching the Tour de France? Crazy stuff is going on. Like crazy, crazy, crazy stuff. There was a an incident in the last week which I call a sepcus, because it was very similar to what happened in the Vuelta a España a few years back, where the breakaway went out with a domestique in it, and the next thing you know, there's a huge time gap. So anyway, that was exciting, and there's a lot of other exciting stuff, some great attacks. That's too much to talk about. We'll get to it later in the show. And last Saturday, a couple days back, I was up in South Hero, Vermont, announcing the Farm to Fork Fondo for my folks at Farm to Fork Fitness. And it was gorgeous. The weather was perfect. Yeah, there's a little wind on the island, but even that wasn't bad. It was beautiful out there. So that was fun. It was fun getting together with my old friends again, talking to people. And I've got I got some things to talk about there, too. Still loving my e-bike. Yeah, and I got an e-bike story to tell you guys, too. Hopefully, I will remember to get to that right away. And, of course, also remember that it's an important time of year. People are really in need of bicycles right now. We have a program here in Willimantic called the Windham Area Interfaith Ministries. They are in desperate need of bicycles to fix up and hand out to people who qualify for them. So you can get more information if you just go to their website or their Facebook page. Look up W.A.I.M. and you will find them. And let's see, I also have and finally, on a positive side, stay healthy. Duh. Yeah, it's all about bicycles. Anyway, everything's all about bicycles on the show. That's the way we do these things. Mechanical Minute and Bike Tips, observations from organized rides. Yeah, I see a lot when I go to announce these events. And I have a lot of people that come up to me because they think I'm in charge because I'm on the microphone. So therefore, I must be the guy in charge, right? No, I'm not just, I'm just the announcer. That's all I'm doing. Just trying to keep things going, keep everybody's spirits up, play a little music, get them charged up and ready to go for the ride. But inevitably, they come right to me and they say, hey, I got a problem with my bike. Well, you know, you go over there, that tent over there is taking care of all bike repairs. I'm not the person who has that. I can't handle the registration. The registration's over there. I'm constantly pointing people in all different directions. I'm not sure if my buddy Scott, who runs this, knows just how much I do. But anyway, I do a lot of things for him. And so one of the things I get a, I got a question about, and I just got to love this one because I'm such a cables guy, you know, a cable and regular caliper brake kind of guy. I just, what can I say? Oops, I forgot to charge my electronic shifting battery. Well, sorry about that. You know, there's not a whole lot you can do about it. It's not like you can go with, like with my electric car, you can go to the fast charger and give it a boost and then off you go. At least as far as I know, it's not like that. But yeah, that's a problem. Things to check and systems to remind riders of the fact that your bicycle does not have cables. Yeah, it's really nice, very clean, looks really good. But what happens when that electronic shifting goes wrong? It's kind of a double-edged sword, okay? So while it does offer incredibly crisp, maintenance-free performance, system failures can quickly become a roadside nightmare. So whether you're dealing with dead batteries, unresponsive motors, or crash mode lockouts, getting an electronic driving train back up and running is and requires distinct troubleshooting approaches. So, and that is not just with regular bicycles with electronic shifting. We're also talking about e-bikes too. What can I say more about this? If you're going on an event that you have just traveled to from a very, very long distance and you are very excited to go to this event and you're definitely a, you know, you think you're pretty fit, you know, you worked on your fitness so you can handle it and all. Did you check your bike? Did you get maybe the local bike shop in town to give it a once over just to see? They do that sort of thing and they're glad to do that sort of thing. Yeah, they're glad to charge you for it too. But you know, if you can't do it yourself, then have someone who knows what they're doing do it for you. That way you don't have to rely on the mechanic at the event to be able to take care of your bicycle. And just you know, you show up with a fit body, you show up all set to go and trained and ready, and then your bike's not ready? Anyway. So, dead batteries and system lockouts. Yeah, you know, you get a dead battery, maybe your bike gets stuck in one gear, and now you gotta ride the whole thing on one gear. That's no fun. I can tell you that. I've done it before because I've broken cables. But when you break a cable, you can also set the derailleur in whatever gear you wish to set your derailleur in. Whereas when you have electronic shifting, you're kind of given a choice, and that's it, just one. So anyway, that's why I'm still a cable guy. I'm sorry, I am a cable guy, and I will be. I'm not going to apologize for being a cable guy. I know a lot of cable guys out there, even ones who work for the cable company. So anyway, so after a minor crash or dropping your bike on its drive side, the derailleur goes entirely limp. The small internal servo motor detects a sudden impact and disengages to prevent internal gear damage. The fix. On DI2, you hold the junction box for about 5 to 10 seconds until the red-yellow lights start flashing. Of course, you have no battery. None of this works. Okay. And then on SRAM, it usually requires pressing a tiny AXS function button on the derailleur, and it cycles itself back to center and reconnects to the app and clear, and then you can reconnect to the app and you can clear the fault. Once again, you have to have some knowledge of electronics in order to do this and some knowledge of the system that you have purchased and are riding on. If you purchased it from your local bike shop, like you should have, because, you know, we're here to promote that local bike shop. We like local bike shops. I owned a local bike shop, and I sold local bike shops for my entire working career, almost entire working career. So, yeah, I'm kind of big on them. I'm kind of big on the whole bike shop thing. And it's, you know, they're there to help you. They know what they're doing. That's why they're in business. That's what they do. They're not there to take all your money. They're there primarily, I would say, because they are enthusiasts to the sport, just like you are. They are as excited about bicycles as you are, for the most part. So you've got firmware nightmares. You got all sorts of things that can go along with this electronic system that you're riding on. So best thing to do is to find the favorite beverage of your local bike shop, or the favorite food, maybe the favorite treat of your local bike shop. Do not go see them when it's really busy. Go see them in the winter when it's like cold and they're all huddling around, you know, trying to stay warm. And go in there then and bring them your questions, and let them help you and let them teach you while they have time to do it. Not last minute, I'm going to Vermont and I'm going to go ride my bicycle at the Farm to Fork Fondo on the Champlain Islands type time frame. But, you know, when they have a little bit more time in the wintertime, things are a little calmer, and you get to go in and chit chat with them and ask them about their favorite ride. Don't just tell them about your favorite ride. Ask them about their favorite ride. Get to know your bike shop. Yeah, I know it's a big promotion for bike shops, folks, but I'm big on it. I like it. I spent 44 years in the industry. It is a very, very important piece of my life. So I'm going to continue to give those guys big shout outs because they work really, really, really hard for very, very, very little money. And even though it looks like all they do is sell really expensive things, there's just not a whole lot of margin in there. So please appreciate your local bike shop. Okay, I did it. I talked about it. Shout out to you guys, by the way, if you are from the local bike shop. So there's all sorts of things you can do, but mostly you gotta just, you know, Fran calls it, can you bless my bike? Now, I'm not the religious type, and I don't hold any degrees or any special connections to anyone out there in the universe, but Fran states it as, will you please bless my bike? So let's blessing the bike. Blessing the bike is to put the bike up on the bike stand and run it through the gears and check and make sure the chain is well lubed, or that there aren't any issues with the chain. If the chain's talking, then she waited way too long to ask me to bless her bike. Now, her chains never talk. I take care of that bike. It doesn't happen. So, and then the other thing, you know, put a little air in the tires. You make sure they're up to snuff where they should be. She went to an event this past weekend while I was up in Vermont. She was doing e-race, and she went and someone... she had a mechanic look at her bike for some reason. I'm not really sure what happened, but he said, oh, your tires are low. You know, you really need to put some air on those tires. Well, I had just topped those tires off, and I go by the, and if you don't know about this, and then you don't listen to my show very often, but if you do know about it, I go to the Silca Pump website, and I use their chart as far as rider weight and tire size and desired ride, and I set my tire pressures based on that. So on Fran's bike, I think I had 75 pounds in the front tire, I had 80 pounds in the rear tire. They're 28C tires. It's a comfortable ride, it's very efficient, and it also you won't get flat tires like that. You're not going to pinch any tubes because you're going to have enough pressure in, and you're not going to get a harsh ride because you have too much pressure in. Anyway, they felt the tires. They jacked the tire way up. I mean, I checked them the other when I came back, and I put my gauge on them, and they'd way overinflated the tires. So, it's a young mechanic. Young mechanics have two things going for them. One is they're young. Congratulations, you're young. The second thing they have going for them is They really like to ride fast, right? I'm not in that game anymore. That game's over. And by the way, you can ride just as fast and far more comfortably if you got the right tire pressure. So anyway, he overinflated the tires. I'm sure it would have been great for him riding his bike, but it's not so good for Fran. She didn't seem to notice, so no complaints on that. But she did complain that I had not checked her bike over, which I had checked her bike over, but that's another story. And if she were here today to co-host me, then we could be having a lovely, oh my God, you're like an old married couple conversation going on here. But not here, so it's just me. You're stuck with me today. There you go, electronic shifting. Can work really good when it's working good, just like a lot of things that work really good when they're working good. But believe me, there's more to it than just charging your battery and other various things that go along. Things can go wrong when you have lots of electronic things. We all walk around with electronic devices in our pocket. As a matter of fact, I'm recording on an electronic device that goes in my pocket all the time right now. And you know how sometimes you have to do the old Bill Gates, you know? And if you don't know what the old Bill Gates is, very famous guy in the computer world, Mr. Bill Gates, taught us many years ago that when everything goes wrong with your computer, what do you do? Control, alternate, delete, right? You shut it off and you turn it back on, or you unplug it and you plug it back in. Essentially, that's what you're doing. So sometimes you have to reset these systems, and you should know how to reset your electronic drivetrain. You really should know all these things. So I'm just the messenger here, that's all. We're going to get into the show now a little bit more. So we did the mechanical tips, and you obviously know my opinion about too much electronic stuff on my bicycle. The only electronic things I want on my bicycle are my computer, my radar in the back that talks to my computer, maybe my flashing lights. Those are all good things. I like that. That's real, real good stuff. Very, very good information. And guess what I do every once in a while? I recharge them. Yeah. You get into a charging schedule. Here's a tip for you. I'll give you a tip before I dive into the next piece here. And that is, the tip is that if you have an electronic device like the one I am recording my show on, and it has a calendar program in it, okay, put in your calendar when you charge your bike, okay? When you need to charge the derailleur system, go to the local bike shop, ask them how often you should do it. It's going to go by a couple of different things. And one thing you have to realize is if you ride your bike a lot, you're going to have to charge it a little bit more. If you don't ride your bike a lot, you may have to charge it a little bit more. You know, it's ask them. They know, okay? Then once again, we're back to the local bike shop. There we go. Big shout outs this week, guys. Anyway, so put it on your calendar so that it pops up, like, you know, your doctor's appointment. That's simple. Or, gee, I have to pay my taxes, and that pops up on your calendar. Put the interval of charging up on your calendar so it reminds you that it's time to do this sort of thing. Simple, simple, simple. Doesn't get any simpler than this. So that way you won't be disappointed when you go to do your event. That's all I'm saying. Okay, so we had this, I'm going to go through a couple of things here. I'm going to talk for a short while about Louisa Gag, who was the street safety advocate in Boston, and just terribly sad. She was out riding her bike, and she got hit by a car. I believe, as I read this article, that they did, I don't think it was a hit and run, but I'm not 100% sure they have an answer on this because it was still being investigated as of this last printing. So let me see. I'm looking down my list here. So she led programs and improvements, made streets safer, communities stronger, and the residents' daily lives better. And she had a legacy that will endure the work that she advanced across the city and the commitment of her colleagues, friends, and fellow advocates to carry it forward. That was a statement by Mayor Wu. It's just sad when this sort of thing happens. And I do believe that the accident is still accident. Actually, they call it homicide. This is a positive thing. They call it homicide. It is still under investigation. So because it was called homicide, it sounds to me like it was driver error related. So I'll leave it at that as a driver error, because I don't want to judge, because maybe it was something they didn't see. Who knows? That particular section of town apparently has had other incidents in it and has been trouble in the past, that Lower Roxbury section of the city. And so, you know, I'm gonna ask a simple question. And I know sometimes you have to ride on certain roads to get to where you have to go, but gosh, if there's a high incident of traffic accidents and cycling deaths there, guess what? I'm not going to ride there. I'll find my way around. I'll spend another 2 miles to get around it if I have to. But I would rather avoid things like that until things get fixed. And they are fixing this area, according to the information that I've been given. So, wow. That's the very, very unfortunate situation. Louisa Gag, strong advocate for cycling in the city of Boston. All right, so what else do we have here on the list? Tuesday's headline, Stay Healthy. More walkable neighborhoods would ease the burden of our overtaxed healthcare system, according to no one special. MIT. Yeah, MIT. Yeah. Cambridge, Massachusetts. Absolutely. An analysis of almost 30,000 census tracts found that walkability is important to both physical and mental health. Key factors include short blocks, urban greenery, and access to amenities like restaurants and cultural institutions. That was put out by MIT News. And then trees not only cool cities, they improve the mental health, provide food, and prevent flooding. Well, with all the heat that we're having right now and all the heat that we're hearing about from France right now and Europe, yeah, we need more trees. We don't need to cut them all down. We need more trees because it does keep the earth cooler. But and not to mention, it makes it so you can breathe better too. Hello. So these are all important things. Then that's why, excuse me, that's why we have to cut greenhouse gas emissions as soon as we possibly can. And only one in 20 Americans has ever ridden in a driverless car. Well, I'm not one of them, that's for sure. I don't know if I'm going to do that. So studies show that variable speed limits, where digital signs display different numbers depending on the time of day and weather conditions, reduce crashes and deaths. I'm going to argue with that one. We have lots of these signs up around our town, and little piece of humor on the side here, because I was laughing. I'm sure the driver of the vehicle wasn't laughing, but we had installed a traffic calming section on Route 275 up by the University of Connecticut over the past year, and it has very visible crosswalks, and it has a center island with right now flowers in them. They're very nice, very pretty. And they put a speed table in on one of the crosswalks. I wish they put them in on all the crosswalks, but who am I? I'm not the king here. I just would like to be. Anyway, and if I were king, everyone would ride a bike. So that's another story. So anyway, I see this truck coming up. It was a big panel van, you know, the ones you can stand up inside, cargo van type thing. And it was obviously a worker driving it and was unaware of the speed table. And he hit it like He was going way over the 30-mile-an-hour limit, and he hit it at top speed, and boy, I've never seen a vehicle bounce and sway and wiggle and jiggle all over the road as much as he did. I'm sure he was a little freaked out after he hit that thing, because his vehicle was certainly out of control once he hit it. So speed tables are great. You know, they're wonderful. If you could put a speed table on every single crosswalk, we could make a lot of changes here. If you don't know what a speed table is, if you put it at a crosswalk, what you have is you have a ramp going up to it, you got a flat section across the top, and then you have a ramp going down on the other side. That flat section at the top is where the pedestrians can walk without twisting their ankles or having any concern with walking on it. So it's very safe for pedestrians, and it's also a great deterrent to going fast, because it will wreck your car if you hit it too hard or send your car spiraling out of control or whatever. If you hit it on your bicycle at exceptional speeds of 25 miles an hour or above, which not many people can do, so anyway, if you do, it doesn't bother you at all. You just go over it. It's a piece of cake. So anyway, I like speed tables. But yeah, staying healthy is the end result of the survey that was done. People who are riding bicycles and people who are walking and using their neighborhoods, which have been converted over to more walkable and rideable friendly neighborhoods, they're staying more healthy. There, this is where we, Fran is usually here, and she will tell me it's spelled D-U-H, like duh. Who wouldn't have known that? Okay, so let's move on to other things in the show. And I gotta say, we gotta go here, because did I mention the e-bike story? No, I did not mention the e-bike story. So I'm gonna go back to the e-bike story first, and then we will get on to the Tour de France. Yeah, very interesting week in the Tour. I have an e-bike story to tell. Gentleman comes up to me at the Farm to Fork Fondo, and he's riding on his e-bike, and I asked him, I said, how do you like your e-bike? I said, I just built one a few weeks ago, and I'm really, like, digging my bike, and so I want to, you know, I want to hear what you have to say. And he said, you know, I got this thing almost a year ago, and he said, I was very against it, you know, I thought, you know, if I really want to get myself back in shape, I should be riding a real bicycle, you know, the standard arguments, or, you know, what are people going to think of me if I'm riding around on a motorized bicycle all the time? I mean, you know, and so we kind of laughed about that, and I said, nah, I said, I'm sold on them. I just built one, and I'm using it to commute with, and I got to tell you, it's a game changer. It takes the yuck out of the hills, and that's good. Does it make me ride like I was 20 years old? Yeah, it does, actually. It actually does. I'm riding as fast as I was back then. And I'm not even on the highest level on my bike. But, highest level of assistance. But it's, you know, it just takes the most difficult part of the ride out of the ride. Do I want that all the time? Absolutely not. I like to ride my conventional bike. I love my conventional bike. I have a bunch of them, and I will continue to ride them too. But if I'm trying to get to work at a specific hour and a specific time, and I need to carry a lot of stuff with me, like, you know, I have a tablet that I use for my classes. I have a portable external speaker that I use for some of my classes. And of course, I've got changes of clothes, because you start out early in the morning. It was 61 degrees the other day and early in the morning. That's a little chilly for this guy. This guy's too skinny, so he tends to not respond well to cold weather. So 61 is really cold. Yeah, you're also talking to the guy that puts a sweatshirt on to go into the grocery store, because it's just too cold. I can't handle it. But anyway, I need to carry extra clothing with me. And also, if you are commuting on your bike, you may need to carry some rain gear with you. So on one of the pannier pockets, there is stuffed in there there's rain gear, just in case. You never know. So you always should be prepared if you're going to be a commuter, and that's what I do. When you start carrying all this stuff on your bicycle, you start adding a lot more weight onto your bicycle, and so, you know, it slows your journey down. I have to be, like I said earlier, I have to be at a specific place at a specific time, and by having that little bit of assistance, I know exactly how long it's going to take me to get there. And a couple of weeks ago, I went for 3 full days in a row without ever getting in a car. I like that. That makes me feel good. And so anyway, he's telling me about his e-bike. That's not my story. It's his story. His story is he's telling me about his e-bike. And I'm looking at him, and he's a pretty big guy. You know, he's pretty tall, and he's got real broad shoulders. You know, he's a good-sized man. And he said to me, you know, I weigh 220 pounds. And I said, well, you look pretty fit for 220, you know, at 220 pounds. And he goes, I lost 85 pounds. And I went, you did not. He said, I did. He said, I was over 300 pounds. He said, my doctor diagnosed me with type 2 diabetes. He was pushing me into medications. He goes, I'm not that old of a guy. This guy was still in his 40s. And he said, I just got a little freaked out. So he said, I bought an e-bike and figured, you know what? I'll give this a try. He goes, yeah, I'm a couch potato. He said, I don't move a lot. So I figured I'd get an e-bike. And he said, I went for my first ride and I was hooked. He said, I came back. I had a big smile on my face. I loved it. I kept riding it. And I lost 85 pounds riding an e-bike. Remember that survey that I talked about? So many, I tell people this one all the time, so I can't remember when the last time I mentioned it on Bicycle Talk, but there was a survey done, so I'll mention it now again. There was a survey done by the University of South Carolina a number of years, a study done by the University of South Carolina a number of years ago, and they took 60 people, and they were all of the same relative lousy fitness, and they handed 30 of them brand new bicycles, normal type bicycles that you would pedal, and they were committed to the study. You know, they're studying the health and fitness of these people, and then they gave the other 30 e-bikes. And then at the end of 90 days, when it was all over, they had them come back. They did health checks again on all 60 participants. And guess who was in the best shape of all? The people on the e-bikes. Simple answer here. Very, very simple answer. The reason, and the study showed this, that the people that were riding on the e-bicycles were more fit and more healthy than the people with the conventional bicycles was because of consistency, because they would get out every day. They didn't have the issue with a regular bike, especially if you're a new rider and you haven't done this in a long time and you're looking at, you know, you want to lose a little weight, you want to get out there, maybe get a little more fit so you can go up and down the stairs easier, all that stuff, right? You get on a bike, you take it for a ride, you go, oh my God, that's the hardest thing I've ever done. I can't. And you take a day or two or maybe a week off, and then you go, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to try again. Bum, bum, bum. People with e-bikes got out on their bike the next day, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day. Consistency is what helps you with your fitness. And that goes for riding the conventional bike too. A lot of people tend to, I see this all the time because I teach a lot of fitness classes, they tend to go all out right away. And because they could 20 years ago, so why can't they do it now, right? That's not really the way it works. But anyway, they go all out for, even a week, you know, they decide, I'm going to do this and I'm going to make myself more fit and, you know, I'm going to spend some time at it. And they go out for a week and then they give up. We call them the resolutionists at the fitness centers and the gyms. Viva la resolution. And they tend to lose interest because they hurt, they're sore, they're tired, they're exhausted, really. And their bodies are just saying, stop this. This is too much. Small baby steps, baby steps, baby steps, baby steps. That's how you get to the point where you become I'm not going to say addicted to the exercise, but you become dependent upon the exercise and what it can do for you and how it makes you feel. So I have an explanation to people. I call it the 10% rule. And that is that you never increase more than 10%. So if you went out for a 10-mile ride on your bicycle and that's what you did, and now you want to increase by 10%, you're going to only add a mile onto it, and that's going to be it. So then it's going to be an 11-mile ride, and then it's going to be a 12.5-mile ride or whatever. You do the increments. And I generally tell people to do that on a weekly situation. So if you went for a 10-mile ride on Monday and you felt like you wanted to give it a shot again, then you do a 10-mile ride on Tuesday. Don't do more. Do a little less on Tuesday, do a little more on Wednesday, do a little less on Thursday. You know, mix it up so that your body has a chance to recover from what you're exposing it to. So anyway, 85 pounds. Big guys, 220 pounds now. He lost 85 pounds. That's impressive. And he said, I could have never done it without this bike. He said, this bike has become an inspiration to me. So, e-bike story. Moving on. Tour de France. We got a lot of interesting, inspirational stories going on here. Oh, my God. The weekly update. Oh, God. The Tour de France can be... You know, it's probably the most watched cycling event in the world, and it's just spectacular. It's colorful, it's dramatic. There's passion. There's heartbreak. There's just so many things in the story which are wonderful. And by the way, if you're perusing around, I'll see if I can find it, because I started watching it yesterday and I just had to finish watching it. There's a wonderful interview on YouTube. I think it was done through NBC Sports, who is broadcasting the Tour de France right now. They interviewed Phil Liggett. Phil Liggett has been a broadcaster for the Tour de France and everything else in cycling for most of his career. He was a bicycle racer, and now that's all he does. He just talks bike racing. And I got partway through this thing, and it brought tears to my eyes a few times. I mean, it's just, what a remarkable man. Anyway, shout out to Phil Liggett. So after 9 brutally hot and chaotic stages, yesterday was the rest day, first rest day for the 2026 Tour de France. Of course, you know, a few things happened along the way. We started out with that team time trial, and Visma rode like a machine, and they really rode like a machine. And then they launched Jonas Vingegaard at the end, and he put 12 seconds on Tadej Pogačar, and all of a sudden the race is on, and here we go. We got the two best teams out there. One of the teams beats the other team by 12 seconds. There's some possibility here, right? It could be. Okay. So we saw a few things happen, though. And then we saw a breakaway, a large breakaway that drew a whole bunch of riders who shouldn't have been there into yellow jersey and second place and third, you know, just places that they were not intending to be in. And then along comes the Tourmalet. And the Tourmalet is a classic stage in the Tour de France. It is storied. There's been races won and lost on the Tourmalet. And this race changed overnight because of the Tourmalet. We had riders that had 6 and 7 minute advantages over the regular GC riders in this race. And that day, it was lost to them, and everything else changed. So we have the future of cycling is great. Future of cycling is bright with loads of talent age 25 or younger in the top 10 of the general classifications. So riders, 6 riders to be exact, have found themselves in this position. All right. Del Toro, Juan Ayuso. And Del Toro was in third place, 22 years old. Juan Ayuso, 23, in fifth place. Paul Cézas, 19, the French wonder, that that has been really giving the French a great, great inspiration to the fact that maybe a Frenchman could win the Tour de France. That would be good. They'd love to see it. Hasn't happened in a really long time. Florian Lipowitz, he's 25. He's in 7th place. Lenny Martinez, 23, in 8th place. And Matias Skelmos in 25 in 9th place. However, the then came the Tourmalet. And the Tourmalet, it was a mountain stage race, definitely. Very, very difficult. There were crazy things going on. There was a time when it was Tadej Pogačar was with Del Toro, and who was his teammate, and they had put some distance on. There was a hard charge to the finish, but the peloton or the chasing group was right there, right behind them. And Tadej looked over his shoulder, and he didn't look over his shoulder. He was right behind him, and Del Toro was getting ready to lead him out into the sprint so he could get the win, right? And Tadej said, "No, this one's yours," and he let him win. And it was very obvious that Tadej could have probably left him right there and then gone across and taken all the glory, but Tadej decided that it was more important for his teammate. I'm going to give him a lot of credit because I have been a little critical of Tadej Pogačar and his ego, and this I did not see. This I saw. I saw a change in the man. The man who is now commanding the yellow jersey in the Tour de France. It is just so cool to watch this race. He has quite a bit of a lead over second place. And so, Jonas Vingegaard has got some work to do to put this together. I'm sure there's a lot of strategy going on and inside that tour bus as they're trying to figure out how they're going to bring this tour back to them. Because right now, it doesn't look real good. It looks like Tadej is today. And Tadej is today. And he is, he is definitely... he's a spectacular rider. We can't take it away from him. As much as the climb was the big difference in that race, it's really the descent actually may have won him his Tour de France, because he was descending like at great skill level. It was really fun to watch. Anyway, if you're not watching, I'm so sorry. If you're not hooked on this thing, it's a World Cup. I get it. You could be watching soccer instead. I get it. I understand. But boy, oh boy, oh boy. We're seeing stars rise here. Isaac Del Toro is definitely a rising star. There's definitely something there. Matthew Vanderpoel comes back on the last stage. I think that I watched was the one with Matthew Vanderpoel, and he wins the sprint. There's just so much excitement going on in this year's tour. Lots and lots of good stuff going on. Tom Pidcock had a little trouble with his shifter. We were talking about the electronic shifting. He was kicking the bike. He was jumping up and down. It was almost comical. But anyway, the big story here and the thing that we really know about this is the heat. Matteo Jorgensen wants just one thing on the Tour de France rest day: air conditioning. It is so hot there. It's over 100 degrees Fahrenheit, and it's crazy hot. And that is going to get me into the next thing I want to talk about today on today's show, and that is rider's socks. The UCI. Yeah, okay. So, I laugh at this because, the UCI, I'm very critical of the UCI because they come up with some pretty silly rules sometimes. And one of the silly rules that they had was, of course, sock height. And it was really, really important that they had the proper, this was done in 2018. The UCI added sock height ranging from mid-calf to almost knee-high. The rest can only be 12.5 centimeters wide or long and can only incline 15 degrees. Why? Who knows? They think there's some sort of aerodynamic difference. So, since that's what they're looking at, there are these new things that they were using in the tour and have recently been banned. And unfortunately, they could not use the current socks, okay? And they're not socks that you put on your feet, okay? These are socks that are filled with ice and you put down the back of your jersey. You put them down the back of the jersey so that you can then let the ice melt and cool you and keep your core cool. It's a great idea, right? 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 It's banned from being used in the Tour de France during time trials or anything else. Okay, so the TT is the answer, because the UCI has determined that when you put an ice sock back there, you change the aerodynamic position of yourself on the bike, and therefore you have an unfair advantage. Well, do you have an unfair advantage if everyone else is doing it too? There's a question for you out there. Let's see how you feel about that. It changes the morphology of the rider's shape, UCI commissioner told Cycling News this past Saturday. I know it's only a little thing, but you have to draw the line. If you allow it sometimes but not others, it's not fair. And if you allow a little, riders might take more. An ice sock is a pair of tights that has been cut up, stuffed with ice cubes, and tied off. It's a common tool for a Peloton trying to stay cool. Remember now, the temperatures are over 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Really, really, really hot. So the comfort and the safety of the cyclist and not having them get overheated, have heat stroke or some sort of, you know, sun poisoning or whatever you want to call it, it's critical, because you've got riders that are going all out. They're riding 28 to 30 miles an hour. And if somebody gets delirious because they're hot, they could cause a huge problem for everyone else. Not intentionally, but it could just happen. So this isn't the first time the UCI has moved to ban the use of creative aerodynamic gains from time trials. So that's what's going on with the ice sock. And then we talk a little bit more about, so how did these guys stay cool? I mean, it is miserably hot. If you've ever ridden at that temperature, you know what I'm talking about. I have friends who live in Phoenix. They ride between 5 and 7 a.m. and that's it. So this is a situation that you need to pay attention to. And when it gets to be those kind of temperatures, you got to figure out ways to keep yourself cool. So there's, of course, other things besides ice socks that can help cool you down. It seems to me that I saw actual bags of ice being, you know, clear bags of ice being put into the back of jerseys because these guys are overheating so much. And, you know, you got to keep the core down. That's the whole idea. So it said here that after, this is unlike the P gate of the Giro d'Italia, the P thing, another story in itself. The ice block was not mentioned in the post stage report. And it's unclear whether the ban will be applied to the 19 road stages of the Tour de France. If ice socks are out, then the Peloton will have to find a more innovative way to deal with the heat wave. And like I say, I saw them just dumping bags of ice into the back of their jersey. And, you know, it's, you gotta stay cool. There shouldn't be a penalty for that. Plus the ice is gonna melt very quickly anyway. So it's really not that big of a deal, but apparently it is a very big deal. So anyway, yeah, ice socks. The UCI, they're my favorite organization. So how do you stay cool at the Tour de France? Let's see what we got here. We've got alcohol sprays, we've got frozen carbs, and that's just the tip of the iceberg here. So there's lots of ways to beat the heat, and a cool drink just really doesn't cut it. You know, I mean, sure, it feels good at the moment, definitely feels good, but it's not going to be able to cool you fast enough or consistently enough. So UCI decided to ban the good old-fashioned ice sock, though there's no stuffing anything down your jersey rule. That's a real question mark. So that may or may not be an issue. So we shall see as far as that goes. So the ice sock, you know, you get a pair of tights. We talked about that. And it's a very cheap way of cooling the blood where it's nearest the surface, big high volume vessels. Also, you know, your kidneys are processing a lot of blood through your body. And if you can get the ice closer to the kidneys, then that will help keep you cooler. So, you know, these are little tricks that you use, right? You got to be able to do this. So now they're also using things called ice vests, but they don't use the ice vest while they are riding. They use them after they're done. So you're going to see these guys that come in to the finish, and they're on their trainers, winding their legs down, trying to cool down, and they'll put those ice vests on to get the core down as quickly as possible. It says here, they look like they're wearing a Gillette of Kraft singles, and each team has some sort of ice vest on hand for riders to wear during the pre-stage warm-ups and also for the cool-downs. The aim is to get muscles firing and shake out some of the residual lactate without allowing the body's core temperature to rise unduly or sweat too much, expelling vital fluids and salts. They are rarely actually ice. However, if those orange squares weren't a dead giveaway, they're like, you know, the ice packs that you put in your freezer when you want to get your cooler to hold things cold, or your lunchbox or whatever you've got. So they're also, they stay in there like a gel form, and despite being sub-zero, meaning they can more readily conform to the rider's body, increase the surface area and contact of the gel, thus increasing the effectiveness of the garment. So it's made to kind of mold into the body of the rider that is wearing it. And that's almost always the first thing you see, is they're putting those things on them right when they're on their bikes, cooling their legs down at the end of a race. And some teams use vests that simply cover the whole torso, while others seem to have cooling patches only in strategic areas like the neck and spine. I would probably argue that they might have something really close to the kidneys too, because there's so much blood flow going through there. But anyway, I'm not a scientist. I'm just a bike rider that tries to stay cool. So anyone who... even if you tried to sleep through these heat waves, it can be really hard. So you got to get your body cool to start with, so that your body isn't fighting extra hard to do that. So we're going to see a little bit more of this. I think there's going to be some really clever and creative things that have emerged from the crazy weather that they're having over there. Okay, carbohydrate freeze pops. All right. So it's a frozen gel during warm-up that is tried and tested and often brought in on the hottest days. It's nothing fancy. It's just an easy way to replicate back home, though eating a frozen one while riding is a lot harder than on a static bike or a trainer. At that very least, it could keep you cool while it thaws out. So the Alpecin riders were eating ice pops a few minutes before the start of their TTT at their triple time trial, their team time trial effort. And ice slushies are often used to lower the riders' core temperatures. So alcohol spray. Okay, it's the last one I got here, I think, on my list. Actually, there's a few things. But evaporative cooling is pretty simple. You put a liquid on your skin, and it turns from a liquid to a gas. It takes heat away from your body in very simple terms. Water has been the go-to for this since forever, but water doesn't actually evaporate very quickly, especially when it's humid. And as such, so there are teams that have been opting for a spray bottle full of alcohol, surgical alcohol rather than Smirnoff, by the way, at least a mix of alcohol and water, which is sprayed only on the arms and legs. It evaporates more quickly, therefore gives a more rapid cooling effect. And in all honesty, this probably isn't one to try at home, and definitely don't go pouring any onto your head or near any road rash, as you might enlighten yourself, so to speak. So be a little bit careful about that. And then forearm bathing. Okay, an old military trick for avoiding heat-related illness, now co-opted by INEOS at the start of the opening stage. Forearms have many blood vessels very close to the skin surface, particularly when you lean as pro cyclists are. Submerging the forearms in entirely cold water, it's 8 degrees Celsius, that's pretty darn cold, which could rapidly cool the blood and subsequently the core temperature, ready for it to shoot up again during the time trial. So it looks dumb, and if it looks stupid but works, then it isn't dumb. So that's another thing that's being done. And then, of course, good old-fashioned water. You know, we used to, at the end of our Farm to Fork Fondos, I haven't done these in a while, but we used to have a cooler full of ice water, and we would take small towels and we would let them soak in there, and we'd hand people a small towel that was iced down at the end. So there's a lot of things you can do to cool you off on your long ride or whatever. When I was racing my bicycle, we used sponges. We had 5-gallon buckets of water and sponges in ice, and we would soak the sponge, hand it up to the rider. The rider would then use it to wipe their face down, which feels great, by the way. Wipe around the back of your neck, that feels great too. And then take the excess water and just squeeze it over the top of your helmet, and then toss the sponge off to the side. Works great, but you have to have team support for that. So that's what I got. That's what I got this week. That's what we are done talking about the Tour de France. We are not done talking about the Tour de France. It is going to be unbelievable. There's just so much going on here. But I have to move on. And so as far as upcoming events go, it's Tour de France. That's all I got. There's other things going on locally. I'm sorry I haven't shouted them out. But anyway, I'm going to move right into finishing points. I want you to give me your opinion. By the way, did you happen to notice the gas prices went up again? Somebody started bombing someone and all the prices went up. Some Straits of Hormuz got closed off. Now everybody's, you know, jacking up the price of gas again. So, you're riding your bike? Are you riding your bike? You don't even notice this if you're riding your bike, because it doesn't really matter. It doesn't affect you. That's why I like riding my bike, because gas prices are not a big deal when you're riding your bike. Actually, they are a big deal. Everyone looks at you in envy because they know you're not paying that much money at the gas pump. Instead, you're eating really well. Save the money for the good stuff. There you go. Remember, bicycling is freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes. Cycling is an easier and safer option for more people, because when more people ride bike, people are happier, they're healthier, our communities are safer, friendlier, our planet is greener. This is a good thing. Tell your best friends. Tell anybody. Tell a person you don't even know. Ride your bike. It's really good for you. I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud. Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic and dangerous roads and the price of gas and lack of places to safely ride. Do your part, okay? Get out and ride your bike. And take the Pedal and Ron Challenge. Here it is. One day a week. This is it. There's a challenge. You can increase it if you want. One day a week, park the car, only use your bike. You're going to surprise yourself. And remember, whether you're riding your bike or you're driving a car, please be safe and kind. And remember that every person you pass as someone waiting for for them at home. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Storch, who just left. I heard her go out the door, off to work. And if you're watching on Facebook Live, you can feel free to comment down here below. And if you're not and you're listening to this in an audio file on the radio, then you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Peddlin' Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Get on your bike and ride!